Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. I appreciate it very much. I'm excited about having our good buddy Bert Folsom back on the show, the historian in residence at the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust. But more importantly, he's an outstanding professor at Hillsdale College, professor of history at Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan. He's the author of two books that I still use on a regular basis, ladies and gentlemen. I still go back and find things that I need to know about entrepreneurs and about the history of this great discipline that you and I are involved in, being an entrepreneur. I still find important things in his books. One is The Myth of the Robber Barons, and the other is Empire Builders. He's our good friend, Bert Folsom. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good to be here.
It's good to have you back, as always. And Bert, today is President's Day.
Well, let's celebrate.
Yeah, and, well, in fact, you know, I don't know if, I'm sure you know this, folks, I should never say that to Bert, he does know all these things, but I had forgotten that they were already celebrating George Washington's birthday in the last year of his presidency. 1796 was the official version of the holiday. They commemorated his birthday in 1796.
Well, that's pretty impressive.
They were making a big deal out of it way back then, weren't they?
Commemorated while you're still in office. They must have expected a good last year from him.
Yeah, and apparently they were still celebrating it all the way through the mid 1800s, and then they started celebrating Lincoln's birthday in beginning in about 1865, right after his death. And then as it moved through, and it finally became a federal holiday, Washington's birthday in 1968, I think that was when it may have become a federal holiday. I'm not sure. You have that date?
No, I don't.
And then of course in 71, that's when Mr. Nixon, President Nixon, kind of combined them all into one holiday, the President's Day.
Right. And, of course, different states had options on whether to celebrate them or not.
Right. Well, why in the world should we do this? Why should we commemorate all these guys' birthdays?
You're talking about the presidents or just generally?
Yeah, the presidents.
Well, you know, a lot of the when we consolidated to President's Day, then we had it was like October 12th became Explorer's Day. You know, it's no longer Columbus Day. I think it's good to celebrate individual people because individual people are the heroes that made a real difference in our country.
Well,
we celebrate people who really made a substantial difference for the better in the history of our nation.
Because I don't want to celebrate Jimmy Carter's birthday. I mean, I mean, God bless him, and I hope he lives forever. But
well, I mean, a hero, I said. I don't.
Okay.
with the 20%+ misery index, he didn't go out quite that heroic being celebrated in his last year in office.
He was a pretty sorry president, and I know, folks, you're thinking I'm picking on him, but I it's just the truth. I mean, I'm just telling the truth.
But historians' polls, Lincoln and Washington always turn out that either one and two, or the lowest I've ever seen either of them ranked is three on historians' presidents' polls.
Is that justified?
I think so. I was involved in two presidential polls that I ended up voting for, and I even teach a course on the history of the presidency this semester. And I put them one and two, Washington one and Lincoln two. And there were parts of Lincoln's presidency I did not want to rank highly because there was a destruction of civil liberties under his administration. Mm-hmm. There were people jailed. There were newspapers that were shut down. And the
habeas
income
corpus
tax
was suspended?
Habeas corpus. We had the income tax start in Lincoln's administration.
What?
And those, yes. It was not a constitutional amendment until 1913, but
forgive him for that thing.
And it was progressive. It was a progressive tax, too. But we did get rid of it in 1872, and that's one of the things. It was a temporary situation. And so 7 years after the Civil War, the income tax was dropped.
They
so
knew how to, they knew how to tax and then get rid of the tax in those days, didn't they?
Isn't that nice to think about? You had a tax, and then they just got rid of it.
Yeah, we don't need this stinking tax. You know what I admired? The things that I admire about, one of the things I admire about Washington, when he, his speech, his farewell speech, which apparently he never actually delivered. He only sort of released it to the press, as you and I have talked about before.
Right.
There was a really important reason for him to do this. It had a strategic reason. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what that strategic reason is. Folks, I'm going to tell you, Bert already knows this. You may too, but I think you'll find it interesting. I've got a little quote from his speech that I think you'll like a lot. 20 Tales. Stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend, Bert Folsom. We're back at 17 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, visiting with our good friend Bert Folsom, the author of The Myth of the Robber Barons and Empire Builders, How Michigan Entrepreneurs Helped Make America Great. Bert, tell us where those books are available, please.
Well, those books are available on the Internet, and The Myth of the Robber Barons is in its fourth edition.
It's amazing. It's actually not amazing. I'm just very pleased. And folks, as you've heard me say before, whenever you hear a book that's in that many editions, you know that it's a good one. And I've said over the years, no chopped liver on the Small Business Advocate Show, only the best for my audience. And Bert certainly fits that bill. Okay, I mentioned that there was a strategic reason, Bert, why the President Washington gave, why he delivered this speech and got it out, got it circulated, was his farewell speech. And
right.
The reason was, Bert, as you know, is he was about to be drafted for a third term.
Well, he wasn't going to let that happen.
No, and he said, I'm out of here.
That's the way to do it, isn't it?
Well, you know, here's the thing. And I heard George Will say this one time, and I really enjoyed. I wish I had a copy of that speech because he gave a great speech one time talking about George Washington. He said, this is a man who did more for America. Largely because when he had the opportunity to do more, he did less.
That was
the essence of what he said.
That is an excellent quotation. His refusal to run for a third term was very important in our history. And King George even said that if Washington does that, he will be the greatest man in the world.
Did he say that? Wow.
Which is hard to believe, but the reason is Washington was the first person to have a lot of power, have access to continuing it, and then stop. That was just unheard of for the late 1700s.
Here's a short paragraph, folks, from his speech. It's one of my favorites, and I want to read it to you now. Citizens by birth or choice of a common country, that country has a right to consecrate. Concentrate your affections. The name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. With slight shades of difference, you have the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles. You have in a common cause fought and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the works of joint councils and joint efforts of common dangers, suffering, and successes. You know, that first part, though, the name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity,
right,
will always exalt the just pride of patriotism. What a great line that is. And you know, to think that he understood, it really impresses me how much they understood what they were doing in those days. How, you know, even though we say they had no idea what they were building, the truth is, when you read that kind of language, you realize that he did have an idea.
He did have an idea. At least they knew where they wanted to go. And they knew in order to do it that they had to have certain things in place. And they got them in place. Washington paid off much of our national debt from the Revolutionary War. That basic thing right there is what most independent, newly emerging countries fail to do, and it gets their credit in bad shape right off. And Washington established America's national credit through his Secretary of Treasury, Alexander Hamilton.
Right.
The two of them did a wonderful thing there. So,
Bert, it's easy to be excited and to be proud of and admire Washington and Lincoln and even you know, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
But what's harder for the last one?
Yeah, I guess so. But what about some other sleeper presidents? Who was sneaky good? You know, who was sort of a sleeper out there, and they did a lot of good things, but they really never got the credit.
I think there are a few that belong in that category. One of them, I think, is James Madison. You don't think of Madison's presidency.
Mm-hmm.
He was president during the War of 1812, and he fought it in a very constitutional way. He let Congress declare war. He didn't get in their way. The war got off to a terrible start. We lost some battles. He replaced older generals with younger ones. That's where Andrew Jackson...
They lost Washington.
Yeah. We sure didn't have him around anymore.
I'm talking about the Washington D.C. They captured Washington, burned down the White House, didn't they?
They did. And all of that looks bad, except that he ended up prevailing. I mean, we held on at Fort McHenry. Of course, we won the Battle of New Orleans. But more than that, we were able to stand up to the British there by the end. The war cost $80 million, and he financed it with very few taxes. He financed it through bonds, and we ended up not having a tremendous war debt at the end, and he just destroyed the Federalist Party. They were only around for one election after that. It was at the time, seen as such a successful event.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, most wars get us into huge debt. That's one war that did not.
In terms of his presidency, not what he did before he was president, but could the Louisiana Purchase be seen as Jefferson's greatest moment as a president?
I think so. And he had big constitutional scruples about that because he wasn't sure. There's nothing about purchasing land that's really written into the Constitution. He would have preferred to get a constitutional amendment, but the Senate ratified the treaty that Monroe brought home, and
yeah.
So that was we took it from there.
Is it imperialism if you take over your own continent? Anybody ever ask you that question? Stand by. We can take a quick break. It's 10-10. We'll be right back with our good friend Bert Folsom. Stay with us. Back at 7-10. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Bert Folsom is our guest. He's a professor at Hillsdale College in beautiful Hillsdale, Michigan. It's cold up there now, though, isn't it, Bert?
Oh, it is, Jim. Not nearly as warm as you have it in Alabama, but it's a good school. There are 1,200 students here, and they are ready to learn, and I'm going to give it to them.
Yeah, I know you will, and I know you do, and I'm sure they really appreciate you being there. Bert, Hillsdale College is at hillsdale.edu, is that right?
Yes, www.hillsdale.edu.
They can find out more about it there, so check that out, folks, if you're interested. It's a very interesting college. I think you'll find...
Takes no federal funds.
Yeah, that's the interesting part there. Okay, you had another president that you want to tell us about that was a little bit of a sleeper. He did a lot of good things and doesn't get the credit.
Well, I think that would be Grover Cleveland. He was a very strict constitutional president, and some people think one of the last of the laissez-faire presidents. If it wasn't in the Constitution, he wasn't going to sign a bill. We had a bill to give some seeds to some Texas farmers who were experiencing drought, and it was a $10,000 congressional appropriation, and he vetoed it on the grounds that the federal government in Article 1, Section 8 did not prescribe that we be sending seed money to farmers. Then he proceeded to say, let's raise the money if these people are in bad shape voluntarily. That's the way we need to do it when people are in trouble. And those farmers got more than $10,000 sent to them in private funds.
Well, now, that's leadership, isn't it?
That's leadership. Because today, no president or very few presidents would be willing to risk the wrath of voters and people saying, oh, you hate the poor.
It's too political, isn't it?
It is. It's become very politicized.
Politics is one of the ugliest things. It's one of the great things that has helped make this country strong. And, you know, we've hardened our metal. We've tempered our metal in the crucible of politics, but it's also one of the ugly things, and it's becoming uglier. Let's take a look into the future. Let's go a generation. Let's go 20 years into the future, Bert. And you're good at this. And tell us what we'll say about the Bush presidency, the George W. Bush presidency, 20 years from now.
Well, historians like to look at the past, not the future. We don't have as nearly as good a track record when we talk about 20 years from now as we do 20 years ago. It's hard to tell because you have to see. We will have to see how the Iraq issue plays out. A lot of Bush's future in the way he is remembered as a president will depend on the effectiveness of the strategy of handling terrorism and handling Iraq the way he has. Mm-hmm. He has a chance to be a great president, I think.
What if the result of being in Iraq and Afghanistan actually winds up exporting liberty and democracy, and it pervades that region and basically becomes more the norm than theocracy and terrorism? What if that happens?
Then he will go down as a great president.
Now, a lot of people might say, yeah, what if? But you know what, Bert? You have to try something like that if you're going to even have a what if.
Yes. That's right.
Appeasement wouldn't have made that happen.
No, and a lot of people are taking the positive results of what's happened for granted, that it was an excellent military strategy to win the war as it was won. The follow-up has had a few problems, but, you know, there was a big period of reconstruction after the Civil War that lasted for 11 years.
Well,
left hard feelings for a generation.
For 100 years. But sometimes, for some folks, it's still there. But the thing is, where was the model that we could have used for that part of the world?
Sure.
You know, we're creating the model as we go along, it seems to me. But I really believe, I don't think I'm being too naive to believe that we have a chance.
Sure.
For the 21st century to really derive a peace dividend from this. And I say that, Bert, in the hopes that those who have paid the ultimate price, their families can look back one day and say, my son or my daughter gave their life so that this world could be more peaceful. I pray for that for those families.
That's the best case scenario, and it is a possible one. And I think that's a wonderful thing to pray for, and that is what I hope for too.
Yeah. Bert Folsom, thank you for being here. As always, you're the best. We really enjoy having you on our show.
Jim, thank you. It's good to talk about precedent.
Yeah. Bert Folsom, ladies and gentlemen, the historian in residence here at the Small Business Advocate Show. But actually, he has his day job at Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan. We'll get him back on again real soon. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.